Actually, this whole project started out as just takeoff from my radio-controlled model airplanes. I've been making model airplane wings this way right along. And so, I mean, that's what got me started on this whole darn thing. I got tired of standing on the ground with the control box in my hands, wanted to ride in the thing. But the only thing different in the construction methods on this airplane is the way it's covered. And that's just the glue in the blocks of styrofoam, like on the wings, and using an in-rib and an inboard rib as a template. And just eyeballing the whole thing down with a straight edge. And actually, no matter how far off you get, you still won't have the dipsy-doos of a fabric airplane. You'll never get off that far to get a good airfoil. And it's real easy to sand this stuff down. Actually, you can take off big hunks with a power sander, a disc sander, and then eyeball it in with a sanding block. And the best way of getting a really true smooth surface before you cover it is to staple a piece of 120 grit wet and dry onto a block of wood about the length of that sandpaper and just rub over the whole darn thing. And it's only a matter of an hour's work to finish a whole wing after you've got all the blocks glued in. The covering, excuse me? Yes, I have, but on something this large, what happens is you get a rippled surface. And also, in the center of the wire, you get a lag. And that puts you farther off on any shape you want to get than hand doing it this way. And it turns out it's not a very big job at all. And on fillets and things like that, it's a really simple process. You just glue the block sticking any which way and start sanding. And if you ever get down too far, or after you've stood back and eyeballed it and you decided you wanted to increase the size of it, you just chop a hole in it and glue another block on it and start again. Well, I used white glue and just spotted it every so often. The least you use, the better, because the stuff's real hard to dry. And actually, what actually holds on the styrofoam after you're ready, when you're ready to carve it, I mean, ready to cover it, is that the epoxy will go in all the nooks and crannies when you put the skin on. That's what it's called, white glue. That's what I use. But it's not too satisfactory because it takes too long to dry or get hard. That's right. That's the same process. But the thing is, it's not porous enough to get air in to dry. So, yes, I have. But that, yes, but except that it's kind of, it stays soft. And if you have a bump sticking out and try to sand that, it immediately melts. And that makes a bump when you try to finish it later. It's a little bit harder to do it that way. But you can do it if you just want to hold the piece in temporarily, or if it's not going to come out where you're going to get the skin, where the skin's going to touch it. Yes, sir. A contact cement, it melts this plain styrofoam. That works too. I've done that, and with good results. Oh, you can use that. It's just a matter of waiting for it. And when you mix a batch of epoxy, you've only got about 30 minutes at maximum to do all this. And usually you want to play with it for, you know, a couple hours. And it's kind of tiresome. Besides, that's a sticky mess. On styrofoam? No, I have not. I have not tried that. Sir? Pardon? Oh, no pressure at all. It doesn't matter because this isn't critical on holding it down. All you want to do is hold it so that you can carve. When you end up with this airplane, it's all hand sculptured. Someone's kidded me that I should enter it in one of these sculpturing contests. Actually, there is some specialized tools you need to build this airplane. Like, for instance, to make the wing fillets, I used a mayonnaise jar with a piece of 120 grit sandpaper glued to it. See, and you just go right down the line twisting as you go. Pardon? About 11 cents for a piece of sandpaper being fine in a bottle. Sir? Oh, the question was about the specialized tools you need to do some of this carving. And what we're saying is, like, the wing fillets. I used a mayonnaise jar with a piece of 120 grit sandpaper glued to it and just twisted as I went down the line. You can do that, except that where you have a joint and it comes out to the skin line, it's liable to make a bump. And so if you can keep that back further or just spot it somewhere in the center, it works fine. The best way is just chop a hole and stick it inside. That works the best. some other points on this is like making the gas tank. The whole top of the airplane was glued on in blocks in one piece, and then the canopy was cut out. The gas tank, or actually the front part of in front of the canopy, was cut out then, and the styrofoam sheets were glued to this to form the gas tank. And how I did that was I just glassed three sides of this with the Dynel and epoxy, then sanded out the foam. Then I glassed the inside until it was stiff enough, and closing it up was last. Then the whole assembly was reinserted back on the airplane and epoxy down. That's all one piece, right, and it was reinstalled later. As a matter of fact, the instrument panel is all part of it, too. The instrument panel was put in, too, while it was off the airplane. The gas cap was a 29-cent refrigerator bottle, plastic one. I sawed the neck off of it and epoxied that in, and then took the plastic cap and made the gas gauge and all that right on top. So it's no big investment on that. Yes, sir? Okay. Well, actually, I did use fiberglass on anywhere on the whole airplane. But, right, I mean the process of covering, making a skin on it. And one of the advantages of Dynel over fiberglass is that going around compound curves, it's tremendous. You can go around anything. Matter of fact, that spinner is like an example. Just pull it right over it and start pouring your epoxy on, and I just use an acid brush. It's too small to use a squeegee on a small surface like that. Yeah, I use the 4-cent acid brush, and I always throw them away when I get done. Yes. Okay, I will. All you have to do when you've got the foam surface prepared, is to just lay the cloth on, and you can put overlaps anywhere. You can do it all in little tiny square pieces if you like. The size of the sheet is completely immaterial. And that's all you do is just cover it over on the surface you want to do. Then start, mix your batch of epoxy. The what kind I use was about 8-to-1 mixture ratio, and it gives you 20 minutes maximum, actually maybe half an hour, before it starts to gelling. And all I do is start pouring and spreading it with a squeegee over the whole surface. It moves around a little bit, but you can move it back and forth with the squeegee itself or an acid brush to keep it where it is. With fiberglass? It's not as strong. But it's half the weight. It's roughly half the weight, but it's much more resilient. On shot clothes, it's actually better than fiberglass. Taking, you know, and bending and so on like that. It doesn't, how to explain it? Well, it's not nearly as shatter prone, for one thing. Most of the airplane is one layer. The wing walks, I have two layers, some places even three, right under that black strip, I have three layers. Oh, it's a real rough texture. It's like the walking surface of... Well, on boats, what they do on this is they make decks that way, and they leave it that way, just that process, leave it right there, and it comes out a real rough texture. And what I do next is I run over it with a high-speed disc sander.
Well, the reason I ask, I make props, and I decided to use your process to cover.
If you'll notice, the prop on my airplane is made of it.
Well, I get standing down, I get this real, it feels like a
start. Right, okay. I sand away about 25% of it. Right. On something like that you want to sand down more, you could actually go two layers. But what you can do is about sand off about 10% of it, put another coat with a paintbrush or acid brush on it of epoxy, and just if it's a horizontal surface, and just let that cure, and then the next day I'll just wet sand it, and you can come out real smooth that way. But I found that just sanding off with a power sander about 25%, then going and looking over if I have any pinholes or anything, I use a plain ordinary auto body putty, the two-part mix kind.
Well, I'm taking away some of the diamonds.
That's right, you do, because the stand-up fibers aren't adding that much of the strength anyway. It comes out, you've got on something hard, you've got something about 0.20 thick, roughly. No, 4 ounces is the only way it comes. Yes, I have some. Matter of fact, on fillets and gas tanks and, let's see, any small parts like that, the urethane is desirable because it's so much easier to sand. The styrene it tends to build up more heat and it might gum up on you. So you have to go slower on it. On the urethane, you can go into it with a power sander and completely go through, say, a square foot, cubic foot block in a matter of a minute with a power sander. And on cowls and gas tanks, actually, it's far better to use the urethane because it's not prone to be attacked by gasoline. But on higher strength items like wings and where you want a real sharp trailing edge, I prefer the styrene. Not really. There's been lots of questions on it. Okay, well, it's just a matter of building a box on three sides and fitting it so it fits right inside the walls of that area, and leaving room for your instruments on one end and leaving room for the magneto on the other end. Actually, it turned out I didn't have enough room on mine. I had to carve a dish in it on one end, and then later I had to cut out a slot in the bottom of it when I put in the Alpha 200 because it was too long, and I didn't want to lower it too much. It hit my knee, so I cut a slot right there. That's what... Originally, the gas tank was built 7.5 gallons, and it's down to 7 gallons. Now, every time I add something, I could chop a hunk out of a corner out or something. But it's real easy to seal up again.
What's your range down to now?
It's about 400 miles at maximum cruise. If you throttle it back to, say, 100 or so, where you're down to 1 gallon an hour, it's quite a bit more, but... Yeah. Yes, sir. Oh, no, I don't. It's about 7 or 8 inches, and I've exceeded it considerably myself, and you can't notice the difference. And as far as CG is concerned, the problem with the airplane is it's nose heavy. On calculations, you have to put 300 pounds in the back seat to exceed the aft CG, but you're way over the gross weight then, so you won't fly anyway, so it doesn't matter. That's right. All that will happen is you'll move the CG toward the center with a bigger person in it. Actually, when I fly it, I have got the seat so far forward that I'm 1.5 inches forward of the maximum forward CG in the calculations. So I'm flying nose heavy.
Have you ever done any stress tests on it?
Just all the calculations. That's all.
Well, last year our stress test was up by 12 G's.
That's the whole crew. The spar itself is stressed for 20 G's. Sure.
I went to the public library and got out the book put out by the Department of Agriculture on lumber. And I compared spruce, fir,
right.
Pine, and redwood. I came up with redwood as a damn good substitute. Unless you know something about redwood that I don't know, because it had everything equal or better to fit the spruce except chop.
Yeah. Well, I'm not familiar with redwood, but the other ones I am. Sure. No, I don't have any opinion on redwood at all. The spruce kit for this airplane, all the spruce in the whole airplane, one local supplier here puts it out for $126, and that's all certified aircraft material, too. So I thought that was reasonable enough, and it's a mail-order house.
What's the spar like?
It's a top and bottom, roughly, the center section spar is roughly 2-inch by 2-inch, with a plywood back face and spacers between, so it's roughly 7.25 inches thick right at that point. Maybe we have a section cut out. I think it might be in the airplane right now. Stu, do we have that section of spar? Okay. The brand name? I've been buying it from so many places, I really don't know. It all seemed about the same, provided it's the 8-to-1 mixture ratio, roughly. I've been buying it from several boat supply places, and the last batch I bought was from Aircraft Spruce especially, and that worked just as good, too. No, it's epoxy. Polyester is much too brittle for this application. I'd be afraid of it. Several boat supply places I've been buying Dynel from, it's run as high as $1.85 a running yard for 48 inches, but then I found out Aircraft Spruce especially was selling it for $1.50 a yard, and it's in their catalog, and they've been advertising it in Sport Aviation. That's roughly the same cost as fiberglass.
Well,
on straight surfaces where you don't have any compound curves or go around any sharp corners, actually, 4 ounce fiberglass would probably come out just as good. I use roughly 25 yards of Dynel on the Dilley airplane and 5 gallons of epoxy resin. Did you see that KR? If you saw that KR1 parked next to mine, he started that one in September, and he says he used 7 gallons of resin on his, actually, but he really did a much better finishing job on it. Also, he said he kicked one of them over, so it's hard to say. So it can vary considerably.
Would you see how much weight of Dynel is in the ship and resin? The weight?
By weight, I really don't know. It's 5 gallons of epoxy and 25 yards of Dynel. Oh, and 4 ounces per yard. Well, I couldn't tell because so much of it gets sanded off. Well, it probably worked fine. It's just that I haven't demonstrated it yet, so I can't say too much about it. Also, I was looking into a really low-cost way of flying this thing, and I don't think those things will run on less than 2 gallons an hour. I can't say. I'd like to try one of these days, for one thing, just to have an inverted engine. The engine conversion? Well, this one's a minimum conversion. All that's been done to it is the tapered crankshaft to hold the prop hub. The distributor was thrown away and a oil filler cap epoxied in. And where that long tower on top that held the generator mount, that was sawed off with a hacksaw, and a plate of aluminum was epoxied over the hole. Where the oil cooler was, it's just a bypass piece of tubing, that's all. And that's the whole conversion, except adding the carburetor underneath, making up the intake manifold. It's one of these slide valve injector carburetors, like a Lake, though that one particular one isn't.
Then,
yes.
What type of maneuvers have you done?
Well, I'm a straight and level man myself. The first time I flew this, I'd never flown a tail dragger myself. I'd never gotten checked out, so I drove it around the airport a couple days first. But I haven't had any problems with it. But this airplane has been rolled and looped, but not by me. It was even... Pardon? A little over 150. It was 115 hours when I got here, but I've been flying it the last couple of days. Probably 116. Yes?
Did you also dine out with
plywood
fuselage?
No, I did not. The plywood just has plain auto enamel on it, and that's all.
Okay, what about the
side? Same way. It only covers the foam, right? And it comes down over the plywood, maybe half an inch. Yeah, and then it's sanded to a taper feather edge, and that's all, right? I've seen several built that they went over the whole fuselage just to get a better finish, and then sanding off about 3/4 of it.
How do you get the gear up? I don't know how to put it, but I can't figure out how you can use it. Have one hand restricted.
Okay.
Up,
that is true if you're below 70 miles an hour. You can't do it with one hand below 70. Above that, you've got wind pressure against the landing gear legs. So you can reach over and pull the left side, just lift the latch. It won't go back down because that one's set a little bit tighter than the left side, so that the weight of the wind blows the wheels back, so the latch won't go back down, not unless you pull on the gear handle. So all you have to do is just reach to the left, lift it, and then let go. Then you reach to the right, that's the right one I mean. Then the left one, when I lift it, the whole gear handle swings forward. Then I just have to push it down and the hook falls in. It's a one-hand operation. To put the gear down, if you're below 70 miles an hour, you just pull the unlatch and the gear will fall down and lock. If you're above that, you have to pull back on the handle too. At above 150 miles an hour, it's a hard pull. It's just like slamming on the brakes. Yes, sir. The wing ribs themselves, there's an outboard rib that's made out of plywood, 3/32 plywood. It's just glued right on the end of the spars, and it's a 36-inch rib, long rib. The inboard rib is 48 inches, and that's what gives you your tapered wing. You just eyeball the whole thing right down. Actually, there's 3 degrees of twist on the wing, too. That's just put in as you install your spars, so that you not only have a variable taper, but you have a twist all built in at one time, and you don't even have to worry about the ribs in between, because they're just blocks of foam, and they get carved with the skin all at the same time. It comes out a real smooth surface that way without having to make up a whole bunch of different size ribs.
What airfoil do you use?
This particular one's Area 48, the Spitfire airfoil. Yes? There's only 4 bolts on each wing landing gear attach fitting. So there's 8 quarter-inch bolts altogether, and they're in the center section. The wing spar is stressed for way above that. Those 8 bolts won't hurt anything. Yes, it is. And actually, on the planes, it's called out using 1 inch, but I use 1/2 inch on mine. 1/2 inch thick. That's from the rear spar to the end of the ailerons. The wing is built by just gluing all these blocks on after you put your wing attached fittings on and bolted the wing spars on. After it's all glassed and smooth and so somewhat, the wing is just cut off at the attached fittings with a hacksaw blade. So then you sand out a little material around the attached fittings so that you can get at the bolts. And then the wing ends are just glassed over to close it up. The ailerons then are just sawed off. You just measure it out with a draw line and get it with a hacksaw blade and saw the whole aileron right off. It's reattached by bolting the aileron strap hinges, actually not strap hinges, they're piano hinges, to pieces of 1/4 inch spruce, and then epoxying these back into the trailing edge of the wing and the forward edge of the aileron, and then sanding till it all clears, and then you just put another coat of epoxy and Dynel wherever you need it for strength. It turns out that I've had people stand on my aileron by accident, tip the airplane over, and never hurt anything. So, yeah. Also, this aileron is not attached to the rear spar. It's only attached to foam. Yes, I am. Aluminum piano hinges. They're actually, the ones I got on mine were for the galley doors on DC-8. No. No, I haven't. Not on that. I have on my tail surface hinges, mainly because there's been so much trailering it, and I didn't have any way of locking it down before. Now I've got some battens to slide over. And this constant flapping when I was trailing it back and forth all the time, I do show some wear on my elevator and rudder.
You cover the inside of the foam anywhere?
I didn't on this airplane. Oh, on the wing walk, before I closed up the bottom, I did put a layer of glass on the inside, just where the wing walk is. By the way, here is the center section spar as it goes through. That's how it is, right there. Every 6 inches or a foot or so, there's a piece of wood just as a stiffener in between here going this way. But that shows you the thickness of the wing, wing spar.
What's the web?
The web? Oh, you mean the 3/32 plywood on it? Okay, right. The forward face of the front spar is not covered the whole way. It's only on at the ends where the wing attach fitting and any place where I had to shim it, like where it goes through the fuselage, and where the landing gear attach fittings are. That's the only place you have the plywood on the forward face. On the rear face, the whole thing is covered. Well. My FAA inspector was a little dubious at first, but he only lived about a half a mile from me, and he had to go by my house on the way to work every morning at the Long Beach GADO office, so he used to stop by when we were working on it, and he thought it was great after he saw how strong it was. We were running demonstrations for him and so on to show that it was far stronger than other construction methods, and he was more than satisfied. So I actually never had any problems at all with the FAA. He took care of all the paperwork and everything for me. Not for real, not long term, mainly because the materials we're using are not as prone as fatigue as other items. The Dynel is not as prone to fatigue even as fiberglass, and fiberglass is better than metal, actually.
What about foam?
Well, no, not really. But this airplane was built in 1971, and I have 116 hours on it now. I'm still looking for signs of it. I've got some cracks and bangs and holes in the wings, mainly from trailering it, but that's not from flying it. Two. Make sure you get at least 2 pounds per cubic foot, not over 3. There's a lot of 1.5 pound density stuff around, and that's much too soft, and it tends to peel too. I use the polystyrene. That's right. I use the blue kind they use for insulating buildings. Sure. Oh. Yes. I call out 3/32 cables. Some FAA inspectors are requiring 1/4 inch because that's what you need for a certified airplane. 1/8 inch, that's right. But I use 3/32, well, I call out 3/32, but I actually use 1/16 throughout on my airplane. Most of my stick pressures are less than an ounce, even full out of trim. It's the stick pressure. Pardon? How big pulleys I used? I don't remember offhand. They're small ones. They're about that big around. It's whatever I could find in the salvage yards. They're all different sizes, actually. Easiest way is use a sanding block on a piece of 120 grit sandpaper stapled to a sanding block, a block of wood. Yes. Yes, I have tried that, and it still ends up you've got just as much work after that. Well, I haven't been able to get all the bubbles out doing that. That's the problem. Yeah, right. You have to work out all the bubbles, and I've tried it on smaller surfaces. On a large surface like a wing, you might have problems. You see, that's the thing. And on the smaller surfaces, it's just as easy to run over the thing with a power sander, touch it up with a little body putty to get the pinholes, and then wet sand with a sanding block. And Oh, yeah. Well, that's it. Actually, 90% of building this airplane is elbow grease finishing. And I imagine Fred Keller right here will sure know that. He's got the KR-1 parked next to mine. I say around 1,600, roughly. I don't. I've had a flutter analyst go over this. And what he was saying, just without the wind tunnel test, was he expected trouble around 180 indicated, mainly because of the small gap and the way it's put together with hardly any weight behind the hinge point. The entire ailerons weigh less. An aileron weighs less than 2 pounds, and 90% of the weight is at the hinge point. But if I was going to put a bigger VW engine, I would go to the counterweights. Yes. I'd put them at the outboard end of the, right at the hinge, outboard end. But on my airplane, since I was originally designing it for the really low power and simplicity, I left them off.
What's the red line?
160 indicated. I imagine Fred can do that on his about 25%. If he had the right prop on it. Yeah. It's got an extreme climb prop right now, but it'll be great when he puts his floats on. On mine, I've had it to 175 indicated. No. Almost 40 miles an hour between gear up and gear down. I can't make it mine go over 115 with a gear down, no matter what it does. Even in a dive, it doesn't seem to want to go. But with the gear up, straight and level, it'll just creep right on increasing. I have an extreme cruise prop for that 36 horse on there right now. But it seems like the faster I go, the more RPM I get, so the more power I get out of it, so the faster it'll go. It didn't. The bubble canopy over. I have both canopies and I interchange them. I just pull the hinge pin out and put the open cockpit top on. But on my open cockpit, the windshield is so much lower, and it's right against almost touches my hard hat, and then the headrest is right against the back of my hard hat, so there is no burble or lots of air running around the cockpit. So it actually doesn't make any difference on speed between the two. See, the bubble is far bigger and higher and more wetted surface. So on mine, between open cockpit and bubble canopy, there's hardly any difference that I can notice on speed. Also, the open cockpit is much lighter. With the whole assembly, a 5-foot assembly weighs something like 4 pounds. The bubble cockpit top weighs 9 pounds. On the gear? The gear is sprung, yes. It's a big horizontal spring bolted to the retract hinges right inside the fuselage, and the rest is cantilevered out where the landing gear is bolted to. The whole assembly is a bolt-together, it's a bolt-together assembly. So there's no welding or anything like that on the gear. It's only one moving part, actually. The whole thing moves as one part. You don't have to worry about one wheel being up and one down. Not unless you broke your main spring. Well, we have it half built right now. Yeah, right. It's a side-by-side airplane. It's the same airplane. We just widened it out to 38 inches. This one's 23 inches wide at the widest point. No, no way. Volkswagens only. I like cruising at around 3,100, but it'll run way beyond 4,500 if I hold it straight and level wide open for any length of time. I can go through 4,500 with it. At 130 miles an hour, true airspeed, it's around 3,100. Anywhere, you can run continuously at 3,600 on that airplane, but it feels more comfortable around 31, 32. Pardon? I bought the Heggie prop and sanded it down, refinished it, chopped the ends off, put Horner tips on, and finished it smoother. You'll notice how sharp that trailing edge is. You'll cut your hand on it. Roughly $12.50 a gallon. That's what it is in Aircraft Spruce and Specialty Catalog.
Is that used?
Pardon?
Used.
What do you mean used?
Used.
Used? I don't know. They have put their own label on it.
Did they get all your materials from
I did. I've been buying some materials there. I have their catalog, but actually when I originally built this airplane, I got I scrounged everything wherever I could. Now that a lot of parts you can get in kit form, like the aluminum kit includes all the landing gear assemblies and all that, and all you have to do is drill the holes and bolt it on. It's listed in the plans. I've had several builders tell me they put the whole thing together in one night, wheels and all. Yes, I always do. I put about 10 hours on this particular one before I took it down and refinished it. Oh, yeah, 15 miles an hour difference. Oh, yeah, sure. Right. Well, with this cruise prop, I'm only getting about 500 feet a minute. I have another climb prop that it runs around 800, 900 feet a minute, but it tops out around 135 with that prop on, and then by over-revving, actually. This one, I can cruise all day 3,200 or so, and really get a good airspeed. You know, I can true out at altitude over 150. Well, I recommend a 5338 for most applications. That you can't go wrong, especially if you use a stock. We'll say a Heggie prop, just the way it comes. Yeah, that'll give you maybe, we'll say a 200-pound pilot will get maybe 500, 600 feet a minute rate of climb, and you'll still get 135 cruise. And so for all-around performance, that's the one. But if you're going to fly extremely light like I do, I normally fly at a gross weight of around 480 pounds. So that's the reason why I can get away with this 42-inch pitch prop and with it chopped down so I can get the RPM. I get a little shake around 39 miles an hour, and at 38, the nose just sort of falls through, and I lose about 20 feet, and it's flying again. That's holding back on the stick without doing anything. If I have one wing up, that wing will fall faster, and the other one, it'll catch up. Actually, we ought to have Fred Keller ask something about his, because he built one. He ought to say something about it, because, why take my word for it? He built one, and he's flown it now. You have flown yours, haven't you? Right. Why don't you come up here and tell them something about stall characteristics, because my airplane may have just been a freak, you know.
Well, first of all, I'd like to let all of you know that I think Ken Rand did a beautiful job in coming up with this new idea. I think it's a fantastic technique. I'd like to say again that I think Ken did a beautiful, fantastic idea in this new technique. I really like it. He and I have got some different ideas, but it's a beautiful idea.
Tell us about flying your airplane. Here's the first one I know about that was built from the plans and with our kits and so on like that.
During the construction of it, I, of course, took as much patience and much time as possible. I felt sure of the airplane. The way it's constructed, in my opinion, it's overbuilt. It's a very, very strong airplane. And so I felt safe when I started my taxi runs. I didn't come up with any unusual characteristics whatsoever. So after about two nights of taxi runs, one morning I went out there and did two taxi runs, and I said, I'm going to fly this thing. I turned it around, poured the coal to it. Next thing I knew, I was 800 feet in the air, and I looked out, and I said, I'll be damned, I'm flying. So everything felt real normal. I just kept flying apart, and it kept going right on up. I think the rate of my climb is somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 feet a minute. I'm not sure. But you can point that nose straight up and it just keeps right on going. That's right. I have 65 horse. We were talking about stall characteristics. My particular airplane, I can't get it to stall. It gets right to my airspeed indicator starts indicating at 40. And my airspeed indicator will drop off between 0 and 40, and I get a light buffing. I can either drop the nose and come out of it, or else add power and go right on up. But actually, as having the plane fall off or do a true stall, I haven't been able to get it to do it yet. Negative. I did have to design a steel tubular motor mount. It's a swing mount, but I strongly suggest if you go to a larger engine with more weight, or if you find more weight in your airplane, that you build the airplane, weigh it, make up your engine, weigh the engine, and then sit down with weight and balance and determine your distance from your firewall with your motor mount. The best way that I can describe that airplane, as far as my experience, I've flown five different type of aircraft, four of which have all been tail draggers, and it's the most beautiful flying airplane I've ever been in. It is absolutely stable from any respect. As far as flying it, if you're scared of flying it, my experience is that if you can do high-speed taxi runs and get that tail back down on the ground without it flying, then you can fly with no problem at all. It wants to fly. I found the controls very, very nice. Now, if you move them, it'll put you right there. But the plane doesn't try to fly you, if that answers your question. Okay, I have two questions. I haven't found anything that it does compare to. It surpasses anything I've ever flown. I've flown Cessna 150s, Aronicas, Citabras, T-Crafts, Cherokees, so forth and so on. But it surpasses everything that I've ever flown. The Volkswagen engine, I think, in my opinion, is the safest engine that you can put in an airplane. Well, I went to the bigger engine mainly because in Alaska the smaller Volkswagen engines are just completely gone by the time they get up there. The Alcan takes the toll on all those. So I went to a ready-built Revmaster conversion, 1700cc, dual ignition, and I find it's a very beautiful engine, but I did come up with a little more strapping on my firewall. Of course, this was with the Super Cub type swing mount. My mount is designed very closely to a Super Cub mount. I use polyurethane foam. I personally like polyurethane for several reasons. I can understand that polystyrene has more strength, so forth, but I prefer the ease of working with polyurethane. I think that if anyone's going to build it and they do have a strong desire to go to urethane, I suggest that they get a little bit of both and do some experimenting and make it up for your own. One plane's built of styrofoam and one is built of polyurethane, so either one will work, but I'll stick behind Ken. If he says styrene, then we can go styrene.
What about the height of polyurethane?
Doesn't it tend to deteriorate as much money? I haven't read any reports or any studies stating that.
What was that?
Oh, that's
right. You had a center control system.
The main reason I went to a center control system is I wanted my legs to be able to rest on the side of the airplane. And I tried it with a side stick. I made up a mock of the side stick. And with my size, then I couldn't have that one leg resting against the side of the airplane. I would suggest that you try Ken's way first because it is much easier, and go that way. I personally like the center stick.
If you'll... Well, that's true, but if you'll notice on the X-15, they've got the side stick. Since we're on the subject of flight characteristics, one of the things I've noticed about this airplane, when you're, well, for one thing, the maximum stick pressure is about an ounce. The first few times I flew it, it sort of worried me. I was afraid I'd let go of the stick and it'd fall over and turn the airplane upside down. But it actually hasn't done that, because now I fly hands off all the time. And what happens is you can actually trim the airplane by just moving your head around. I found I can just sit there. After it gets altitude, everything trimmed out, sitting there. After about 5 minutes, a wing might start falling off, and I just move my head over a little bit, and it'll start coming back up again. And then if the nose starts lifting a little, I just move forward slightly, and that you can go to sleep that way. Oh, yeah, that's all right. Well, especially, I'm talking about when you're all trimmed up and you're not touching the stick. If you're holding the stick, of course, there's no problem. I have to visibly remember to put my feet on the rudder pedals before landing, because several times I've forgotten. And on a tail dragger, that you shouldn't do that. Yes. Well, you have a hard skin on it in this case, and no moisture is going to get through, and it's completely sealed. My wings are sealed. Yes. Right. I have noticed it too, and I've got a few places where it actually looks like warpage in a few spots. Right. That is true. That's true. You will get some of that. Yes. Right. Right, right. There are some problems there. There's no absolute perfect material for anything. Is there any other questions? Excuse me? No? Well, I've never spun an airplane in my life, and I hated to do it without an instructor. I've never had a chance to get a check ride.
No way.
No, yeah, but a couple of times where I was sitting there doing, I can do stalls with mine, mainly because mine will idle fast slower than his. His on idle, there's too much power on to do a full stall. But on mine, I can stall it. And all that happens is I just lose about 20 feet, and then it starts flying again. But a couple of times, I started feeding in a little rudder, but all it did was it just fell off again, and it never did go in a spin. But I never really kicked it. Never got the nerve.
Don't know anybody.
No, I've only heard of three or four of them flying so far. The airplane hasn't been out that long. I'd hate to fly in the air next year, though.
How much of a crosswind did you fly in?
I haven't noticed anything wrong with crosswinds at all. Like yesterday, we were flying in a 90-degree crosswind for a while there, and I couldn't notice the difference. I don't think it's any worse than any low-wing tail dragger. I think it's far better than a high-wing tail dragger, say like an Aronca or something like that.
It's far easier to come in with a crosswind. If not, if they're going to have thunder showers. I plan on it, yes. I plan on flying every day. But we'll see later. Right under the cheeks. There's a big hole right under each cheek on both sides.
Oh.
Just look under. Look at the rear exhaust pipes. They're right in the middle of those holes. That's right. No, as a matter of fact, cylinder temperature runs 100 degrees cooler with the cowl on than off on mine. Yep. This is one of the quietest airplanes I ever rode in. Evidently, because it's really quiet, and I got straight out exhaust, and it's when you close that canopy, it's just really quiet, and I'll bet you Fred Keller can attest to that on his.
It's a very quiet airplane, very quiet.
Pardon? I used a spray can on mine, but Fred must have done something a lot better on his. I imagine you can use anything on this, auto enamel would be fine, or the epoxy sprays probably. Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. That's a really stable material, the epoxy is. Well, I've had no trouble with it right since I put it on. I used to have lots of carburetor troubles until I went to that. Yes. Yes, I have tried test samples, and you have the problem with it is the same as with fiberglass. It won't go. You go around a sharp curve or try to go around a compound curve, as soon as you start putting the resin on, it seems to pull away. It's just too much work.
What was the question?
Of using polypropylene instead of Dynel or fiberglass. See, that's even lighter, but the problem is the work. There's no way of keeping it down. You can't go around compound curves. If you go through into a sharp corner, it pulls right out as soon as you put the resin in. You end up with a big air bubble.
When your eyeball remains way suspended, do you have any problem keeping the right one symmetrical to the left?
Well, if you've got an end rib, all you do is eyeball it to that. I don't think it's any problem. I think it's real easy. Actually, I did my both wings at two different times. I did one wing for, it took about a week playing with it, and then I sawed it off, and I turned the airplane around, and I did the other wing. And they both came out looking pretty close. The wing tips is another thing. That's a harder thing to make them look alike. So after I finish one, I had to just set it up there and then work on the other one and keep looking at that one to make them look alike. Actually, that's the only thing with wing tips is to make them look alike. the actual shape of them is completely immaterial. I haven't seen two of them alike on KR-1s, and there's about 50 of them in my neighborhood being constructed, and they all have different shaped wing tips. This one's a Revmaster injector carburetor. It's not made by Lake. They charge $75 for them. If you bought the injector carburetor right from the Paza factory, they make them for racing motorcycles. They're $30. But that's without all the aircraft modifications. But that's a matter of just drilling holes and adding linkages and so on like that. And there is no mixture control on it then. Paza Enterprises in Paramount? Yes. I don't have their address offhand. Yes, that's right. It would be in motorcycle hop-up books.
What town is that?
Paramount? It's just that's a suburb of Long Beach, California. Yes, you just lay it over on dry. It'll stick. You just spread it over, and it'll stick. Mainly just from sort of like electrostatic sticking.
Oh.
I haven't had any problems. It just soaks right through as soon as I pour it on. That may be. Maybe it's much thicker than what I've been using. Oh, this is an 8-to-1, and it runs like water practically. And it goes right through. Oh no, this is thinner than that. Well. It's not as thick as molasses, anyway.
When do you anticipate plans being available for this type of
Well, there's four or five of them being built already. And mainly because when we ordered like the landing gear assembly kit for ours, we ordered a bunch of them, and they went right away. And what these guys did is they came over and redlined their KR-1 drawings and then went home and built it. Because I know several that are on the gear already. But the plans won't be out for a year yet. We want to fly ours first before we come up with set of drawings. It's 5 inches longer overall. Well, actually, the side frames are 8 inches longer, but being so much wider, it comes out about 5 inches longer. And it's about 15 inches wider in the center section. The center section wing section, where the wings come off, is 7 feet instead of 5.5 feet. The tail's identical. And from a side view, it'll look identical. It's no higher than this one, just wider. No, you can sit on one side on it. Because the stick is going to be in the armrest in the center. Something like that. What's this airplane that looks like a bullet out here? It's on a trailer. Anyway, the stick will be like that. That kind of arrangement. Yes.
And it says that it wets much better than glass.
That's right, it does. It soaks through far easier than fiberglass. But as far as getting a smooth surface on there, well, somebody go over and look at Fred Keller's airplane. Don't look at mine, because I didn't take that much pain.
Fred, you
probably asked that. No, you used epoxy, didn't you? Yes, he used epoxy. Epoxy actually is a lot easier to finish than polyester, I think, isn't it? Yes, polyester's too brittle. Pardon? Most of it, just one. Several places where it looked like I didn't apply enough after it was hard, I just painted it on some more on. POSA, POSA Enterprise, POSA Enterprises. I have some data sheets on Dynel. If anybody wants them, come up here and you can have one. I only have about 10 or 15 of them. Is there any other questions? It could go anywhere. I figure anywhere from $800 to $2,000, roughly, depending on how you finish it and how dexterous you are and so on like that. Because I know on me, it takes me about 4 or 5 months just to build a really good finished radio control model airplane. So, and this is more or less a much bigger project than that. There's no such thing really as an easy to build airplane, in my opinion. Well, I worked on it for 2 years, mainly because I had to do a lot of research and materials, and that's a fifth set of landing gear on that airplane, a few other things like that.
What about
Fred's aircraft? Fred started in September. We shipped him all the kits during the winter. Oh, I imagine he's got, how much? He figures around 1,700 hours. And I'll bet you half of it was in finishing it. That's right. Right. Yes. On how to finish it? Well, the way I did it was I ran over it with a power sander, then went over it with body putty, and then just wet sanded that with a rubber block sander. Then I went over that with a primer, wet sanded that off, and then I was ready for my enamel. That's how I did my airplane. I bet Fred did the primer about 8 times, looking like it at least. Yeah. He did same process except on the primer. You put it on about 8 times and sanded it off in between. Maybe more than that.
What kind of vinyl coating do you use, Fred? Any particular
brand? DuPont Emron. He has an extreme climb prop for that airplane. If he had about 10 more inches of pitch, I imagine he could cruise it redline at about 50%. Oh, we're hoping for 145, 150 with we have an 1835 CCVW on it. I hope to have it Oshkosh next year. I hope, if I get a chance to work on it. Is there anything else? Oh, ventilation. Well, I'll tell you, when you're sitting on the ground stopped, it's terrible. But in flight, with a bubble canopy, you get quite a bit of air in through the wheel wells, and it comes in on both sides, and it feels real good. You get a lot more with the gear down than up, too. Several times, one time I went into Van Nuys, and it was 115 degrees or so. I had to put the gear down just to be comfortable. But well, actually, on hot days like that, I use my open cockpit at top anyway. It's wider. Right. Everybody that's seen it calls it Fat Albert. No. No. Well, it gets down to 68 degrees. See, in the sun. So I haven't had any problems at all. Yes, you can. All you have to do is bring a couple of rags, and after you get your gear up, just stuff the holes. They're right there, accessible right by your knees. Yes. Yes, it does. I've had mud all over the bottom of my airplane, right? Especially around the tailwheel. It really covers the rudder with mud. Oh, inside the wheel wells? It doesn't hurt anything. That part is closed off. The part behind the spar is completely closed off anyway. When I get home, I hose it out. Forward of the spar, it can get up inside the wing, but I haven't had any mud up in there. Mm-hmm. We've never flown the fastback one. It's still parked in T hangar. We haven't had a chance to finish it. We started the two-place one and sort of stopped. It's painted, but it doesn't have the engine installed at the moment, and it needs some wing work on it. That's all. It's been parked there for 2 years. Oh, 1600 and up. We've got an 1835 in ours. Yeah. We hate to say before we've flown it, really. Oh, on this one. Well, when I got my climb prop, I can get off normally in 150 feet and climb about 700 or 800 feet a minute with a 36 horse engine in it. With this prop on it, it's about 300 to 400 feet before I get off, and I only climb about 500 feet a minute. I'm scheduled for 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. He said be there between 6 and 8. Yes, I'm going to take a crack at it. We don't know. Not until we've flown it. But like I said, several people come over and redlined their KR-1 drawings and went home to build it. Yes. Sure. Yes.
Whenever you got one bill,
I don't know. I've let three or four other people fly mine, but yeah, right. Well, if I was him, I wouldn't let anybody fly it. Right. Excuse me. He asked if I've been in a sod field with it. Actually, not. But I've been in a really rough dirt field. I made a forced landing in the field one time, and I stopped it in 180 feet mainly by running into a ditch, but it got my prop, that's all. Yeah. What do you operate off of, Fred, normally? Okay, sure.
I operate off of asphalt fields or pea gravel weather type surfaces, but I had one experience before I came down, and I was making my first cross country, and I had another plane with me, which is a 170 Doing conversion Cessna stole kit and the whole works on it, and we had been out for almost 2 hours, and due to neglect of myself, I hadn't filled the tank up full enough. So when I was coming back, we started bucking a little bit of a headwind, and I started running low on fuel. Next thing I realized, I was getting critically low on fuel, so I knew I could make it to this one airport. And sorry to say that this one airport sits on the end of a Kinnick Glacier, which is has some of the most violent winds in Alaska that comes off of it. So closer I got to the town where the airport was, the closer I got to the glacier. Next thing I knew, I was in 40, 50 mile an hour head-on winds, gusting to I don't know what, over. The plane was taking every bit of it in complete stride. No cracks, no stresses, no anything was evident after I landed. I did make a landing in this wind. The only problem I did have after I got on the ground, I was rolling out, and one wing tried to fly, and it drug the other wing on the ground a little bit, causing just minor damage, which took about 2 hours to correct. And but it gave me, it set my mind at peace that this airplane can really take it. Because I'll tell you what happened, my emergency locator beacon slipped underneath of me, and it was underneath my wallet, so I didn't feel it, and I punched it through the bottom of the airplane. So you can get an idea of what kind of violent winds I was in, what kind of tossing around I was taking. But the plane came right through, and I had complete control of it at all times.
Tell us something about the roll rate on it. Is it higher or anything like that?
What do you mean, that? Turning and...
Yeah, right.
Actually, I haven't done a tremendous amount of testing with the airplane. I have had it up to about 45 degree banks and so forth. It you put it into a turn or a tight turn or anything like that, and it'll stay right where you put it. And like I say, I haven't flown it that much. I have 5.5 hours time on mine, so it's a little hard to give any definite answers, but everything looks beautiful so far.
Let's remember that this was never built to be an acrobatic airplane to start with. It was strictly for the little guy. Low cost, I figure it cost me 70 cents an hour to fly, and I don't think it can build a much cheaper airplane. So the first thing everybody wants to know is, what about acrobatics? Well, I'm not an acrobatic pilot, but I did let a guy fly it once that did roll and loop it, and I won't let him fly it anymore. Yes, sir. Oh, well, for one thing, it's so darn rough down there. I was afraid of getting my prop. See, I've hit a chuck hole before and broke a prop, and I'm going to be real careful this week. What I should have done, I didn't realize it later, was I should have not landed the first mile of runway, that's all. That was my mistake. From now on, I'll do that. I'm going to go over that trailer over there by at least 50 feet at flying speed from now on. I imagine this airfoil was chosen originally because it was a fighter plane airfoil, but it's a really gentle and low stall speed one. And most of the people that are going to build Volkswagen-powered airplanes are going to be student pilots mainly. So I thought I'd better stick to something that they can't get in trouble with. And still have something that you get some halfway decent performance. Yeah, you can put a 64,000 series airfoil on it, but you're not going to get nowhere near the slow speed performance that this thing will give you. Probably not. Probably this afternoon. We'll see how the weather looks later. The weather's supposed to be nice starting tomorrow. The weather report for today is thunder showers. Yes.
The thing I dislike so far about it is the low setting ground below. Mm-hmm. I would like to have it higher up and bigger tires. Have you got any kind of a gear that will raise it up on the ground?
Not really. This is as high as I've ever wanted it. Actually, originally it was a lot lower than this. The landing gear I had in it last year put it 3 inches lower. I think the airplane's plenty high, actually. There's no problem with it. I've never hit a wing on the ground yet. Yeah. I see. Yeah. I don't see any real reason for setting an airplane up real high. With my tail up, I've got about 8 inches prop clearance. As long as I don't hit any really deep ruts or anything like that, I'm all right. There was another question over here. Yeah.
I think it's around 12 to 1. I've made several... Well, before I put the new mag on, I used to have the engine problems. And for the one time, 5 days in a row, I had to glide back to the airport. So, but I made it back every time. I figure it has to be at least 12 to 1, because several times I had to go over 5 miles back to make it back. And one time I was at 9,000 feet, about 15 miles from my airport, when the engine quit on me. Actually, it gave me lots of warning, but we were busy taking movies, so I thought, even though I was down to 3 cylinders for a while, and then later down to 2 cylinders, I wasn't in any hurry to get back. And finally quit completely. And when I got back to Chino Airport, I was still 3,000 feet over the runway, so I circled the valley one more time and then later entered the downwind. The prop was stopped horizontal. But I still made the first turn off, and then and I had my car and trailer there, so I just rolled it within 200 feet of the trailer. I had to walk the last 200 feet.
Do you have a starter on that?
No, I don't have no starter.
How did I handle it
well? I think fine. It's got the most powerful rudder I've ever flown in any airplane. You can almost fly it sideways. It doesn't slow it down any, though. the best way to go down is just put the gear down and point it down. If I have to go down from altitude in a hurry, you have to put the gear down. It'll be over red line with power off, just dropping the nose about 5 degrees. It's about a 15-minute operation to remove a wing on mine. I've got taper pins, and they pull out pretty easy. Fred just put bolts in his, so you have to go through the problem of removing them all. I don't think it would take him more than 20 or 30 minutes to take a wing off of his. About that. Oh, I think anyone can build it for less than $1,000, unless you go into a real elaborate engine, someone like that. Actually, Fred built his by sky's the limit, you know, buy everything first class right now, and he only has 2,300 in his, and that's buying a complete Revmaster engine, the whole works. Yes? How long am I going to be here? We'll probably load it on the truck Saturday morning, early. Oh, Fred will be here all week, too. Are you going to be here Saturday and Sunday?
I don't think
so. Okay. Right. Yeah. Pardon? I haven't heard anything about it. No one's told me anything about it. Okay, is that... Yes, sir. If you keep your glide speed up to around 115, my sync rate is less than 500 feet a minute. That's dead stick. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's about it then. If you what happened to my spinner? Anybody seen that?
Sure.
Dinell's a prop.